Welcome to ICL Conversations. In this podcast, we, as elders of the International Church of Leiden, Cor, that's me, Andy, Christina and Joost, chat with each other on topics that we encounter in our church. Being an international church means that we have in our community people of many different backgrounds, both when it comes to culture and to church. You can imagine that this presents challenges, but it's also very rewarding. To make this diversity work, conversations, the space to speak and to listen are very important. We hope to provide a starting point in this podcast. So we are an international church, so we know we are very different. There are challenges to understand each other correctly. And we try as a church to be welcome, to be hospitable, and to be open to all. Over time, the church has two reputations. On the one hand, it's a church that preaches that we should love all, that all are welcome. But the church has also a different reputation to be more exclusive and judgmental, and not everyone feels welcome. Well, as ICL, we always try to return to Jesus. And, I wonder, that we all wonder, how Jesus would fit in a church. Would we welcome him? And would he? What would he do? Andy, do you have any thoughts on that? Because you are a pastor, so
Thanks.
You are full of wisdom.
Oh, great! Yeah, no pressure. Hi, everyone who's listening. No pressure, eh? I mean, it's a great question. If Jesus showed up physically in person, he managed to sign the list of all the persons who could come to a service. Would he feel at home? Would he want to stay? Would he do some 21st century version of turning the tables over like he did in the temple? I think probably all church communities would probably claim or want to claim that Jesus would be at home and he would be happy with all that's going on. And I guess we would want to sort of claim the same thing. But I think there's an openness amongst us also that maybe there might be things that the Lord would point out that perhaps need to change, where maybe we've got some blind spots or we're not being inclusive enough or exclusive enough. I mean, there's that. I think there's some of those, you know, I find that some of those tensions at the core of the gospel. The faith in Jesus is the center of what we're on with. And yes, he's called to love God and to love others as ourselves. But just some of his teaching, you know, about him being the way, the truth, and the life, can sound very exclusive. And yet it's offered to all. John writing for God so loved the world sounds very inclusive. And I think that part's often missed, but he gave his only son, whoever believes in him shall not perish. It can also sound quite exclusive at the same time. And Paul writes, you know, there's neither Jew or Greek, slave or free, male or female. They're all one in Christ Jesus. That's very inclusive. And yet it's in Christ Jesus. So, and also, depending on where you emphasize the verse, it can sound one way or the other. So, yeah, I personally, as a follower of Jesus myself, but also as a pastor in a church in the 21st century, and not just because we're international, we've got people from all kinds of church backgrounds and cultural backgrounds, of how do we walk that out? How do we walk that gospel message out in a way that is true, full of grace and truth and true to the gospel in a way that's as inclusive as it should be, but also is exclusive in the way that it should be. And I recognize that Christians are maybe going to see that differently as well.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if that answers the question or not.
Yeah, it's not part of the problem that we say, well, Jesus is the way, he's the only way to be saved. Is that not a bit arrogant to think that we know it all?
But
is that not how we exclude already everyone who thinks differently? Is that right?
But we're not the ones excluding. Those are claims that Jesus made himself. Right, that he is the way, the truth, and the life. So that's, it's not us excluding anyone. It's Jesus saying, this is how it is. I am the way. I am the light of the world. It's me. So we're not trying to make a claim about ourselves as Christians. We are standing and proclaiming what Christ has said about himself as being the way to salvation. Mm-hmm. So is it really us being exclusive then, if this is just the nature of, like, Christ? That's what makes him different, right? He, no one else made that claim. He's the only one.
Yeah.
And then the question is, do we believe him? Is he a nut, or is he speaking the truth? That's that's what faith is all about.
Yeah, well, we talk about exclusive and inclusive. One element of is, of course, that we have different perspectives. And one of the challenges is to do justice to those different perspectives. And when we say Jesus is the way, it's, of course, something that has convinced us as believers. It's not something that we claim coming from ourselves, as we've made, but it's something that, yeah, in a way we have received. And maybe that's a way to be more humble with it and not throwing it in everyone's face.
Yes.
But still, there must be room for differences. If we are not allowed to make that claim, then in a way we are ourselves excluded. Now that's being inclusive is not that everyone's the same. It's an it's a huge challenge, of course.
I think so. Some of the things that strikes me is that we can end up in a situation of kind of an us and them type thing, and that's where I think it starts to go wrong. And yes, I do believe that those, you know, John 14:6, on the way, the truth, and the life are words of Jesus. And that's pretty clear. It's not saying I'm a way, I'm an element of truth. I'm sort of one part of life. But I think very often, well, not all, some Christians can come across very arrogantly with that. And I'm aware, even in my own journey in the past, I think of myself at high school, I think of myself early university, where I would put myself in that place where I wanted to tell people good and proper, they need Jesus. And if they don't, they're in trouble, basically. And I'm not sure that that really was helping to communicate the gospel with love and grace, or even with truth. And maybe it said more about where I was at than where other people were at in my trying to convince God that I was a good Christian by telling everybody else about Jesus. I think what it can do is it can cause us to sort of cut ourselves off from other people and not be willing to listen to their journeys. I mean, one of the verses that really comes home to me very often about sharing faith is in Peter's letter, where he writes something like, always be prepared to give an answer for the reason of the hope that you have, but do this with gentleness and respect. Now, it's that he says giving an answer that suggests a question's been asked, which suggests there's a dialogue going on. There's an, and that's taking place, rather than it's just we are taking this, the claims of Jesus, and saying, hey, everybody, and ramming it down people's throats, that there is actually a dialogue going on, whatever else someone's worldview might be, whether they consider they're humanist, atheist, a Muslim, Hindu, or just don't know what they think. They're just doing life, you know, and, you know, yeah. But anyway, someone else interrupt, or else I'm going to keep talking.
Maybe it's good to move to a question that's related, because in a dialogue, it's important to listen, but it's also important to explain clearly what we believe. Mm. Because we have talked about Jesus, and Andy has already said that, well, it seems everyone has his or her own Jesus. Who is he? What is his message? Mm. And when we say Jesus is the way, what do we exactly mean? Is that clear to everyone in church and maybe outside church? Anyone?
I mean, it's definitely what they call like God speak, right? Or like Christianese. Like, it's something that if you are in the church long enough, you start learning these different terms and way of talking. And so saying that like Jesus is the way, it just becomes like a normal part of your dialogue. But then for people who are outside of the church, what does that even mean, right? Like, how do you even communicate that?
Yeah.
And I'm sure there are different ways to communicate that. And I think it also depends on your culture, your background, like how you see that. What does that mean? And for me, it means that Jesus is the bridge. He's the way that I can cross from me, myself, and connect to God. He made the way. He cleared the path, you know, all of the stuff that gets in between me and God, whether it's stuff in this world or stuff in myself, whether it's problems I cause myself or problems from life. It's, you know, Jesus is the way. So that's what it means to me. But I would imagine that other believers would phrase that maybe differently. Maybe that's not as theological as it should sound. I don't know.
Yeah. Are we all aware that there was a gap that needed to be bridged? Mm. How became you aware that there was a gap?
Well, so I think, I mean, at least for me, I came to faith in sort of the traditional, you know, like there was a service, they were talking about how scary hell is, and I decided that I didn't want to go to hell, so I needed Jesus. I needed fire insurance, you know? so that's, and I was a teenager at that point. But I didn't, I did not understand what I was stepping into at the time. It wasn't until years later, and realizing that there was an effort that I was making to be good and to be right, like right as in like righteous right, like, you know, morally right or whatever, that never seemed to quite qualify. Like, I couldn't get there. I could never get to the point where I was good enough or okay enough I couldn't quite get there. I couldn't live up to the perfection that I saw as holiness. Now, I've learned holiness is something else, but that's okay. That's a different subject. And so I realized that there was something, someone, something that I needed to get me there. And having that message of Christ being this loving savior that saw me as I am, faults and all, nothing that he didn't know, but still laying his life down for me, knowing everything about me. I needed him. I needed that. I needed someone to see me completely, and to love me anyway. And
I'm going to do a bit difficult. It is a personal story, but we are talking about the church sometimes being exclusive. Is that feeling that you are missing something or not enough, is that not something given to you by the church because they were also judgmental?
I would say, I feel like it's not completely fair to say it was given to me by the church. It was definitely something perpetuated by Christians. It was definitely something that was confirmed by Christians, but it was that belief of not being enough came from somewhere else outside of the church. That came from family of origin and things like that, my own background. But it was definitely, like I said, confirmed by Christians. Yeah. I used to think Christians were super, super weird. And that was part of it, because there was always, it was a way to identify yourself, but also to identify who was not part of your group. I had family members that would introduce me to friends of theirs, like, yeah, this is my my cousin Christina. She's not a Christian. And it was just
wow.
You know what I mean? So it was confirmed that there was like something wrong with me. But I don't think it's fair to say that it was the church itself.
Yeah, people in and outside church maybe did that. Yeah, I'm asking that because on the other hand we have inclusive, and it's especially important for people who wrestle with themselves, feeling excluded. Yeah, especially when we speak about LGBTQ, they often feel excluded, and they emphasize that being included is important. And there is a social dynamic that's there. And the way you, Christina, summarize the gospel is often how we talk about it. Mm-hmm. That is, if I would say it that way, there is something wrong with us that must be corrected. And Jesus did that. Can that not lead to misunderstandings? Can we find a word that explain it better?
Okay, I just put before, and I please let somebody else talk because I'm talking a lot, but I want to clarify something. I said it the way I said it because I was answering your question about how did I recognize that I needed, that there was a gap to be filled. But this is still my struggle. I mean, if you know me, you know this, that I am a believer, and I have been a believer for, I don't tell you how long. It's been a while. But I still struggle with feeling like I'm not enough. It is definitely something that is Christina. And I'm not the only one. There are plenty of people that feel that same way. But it was part of my journey to needing a savior, was recognizing that I always felt like I wasn't enough, that there was something not right here. But that's my journey. And when I talk to people about Jesus, that is not what I tell them. I do not say there's something wrong with you. You know, that's not how that just shuts the door. How in the world are you going to transition from that to, but we love you? No, thank you. That's okay. And I think that's probably where, you know, the church at large has maybe dropped the ball, is that we've turned it into that, like there's something wrong with you. But we love you, and you know we can fix it together. That sort of thing, which I think doesn't transition well, in my opinion.
Yeah, but I think a lot of it is that the church in general can come across is about behavior management, or you've got to act a certain way, and then you can be vaguely accepted. And so you know the whole challenging message of Jesus saying, coming back again, I'm the way, the truth, and the life, gets lost in just a whole load of other exclusivity, which just gets wrapped around it. And whether that's someone in their journey with their identity, their sexuality, their gender, whether it is because someone has a different worldview, that they're Muslim or they're Jewish or they're a humanist, it gets lost by all this other stuff. And I think for me, that's some of the tension point, as well as I'm not convinced that the gospel, which isn't what you were saying, Stina, but the gospel is, well, God loves you. It's great news. Jesus came to save you. But if you don't turn, you're going to burn. I don't see that as a good news message, really. And
that's
yet,
a fun rhyme.
It was quite cool, that, wasn't it? Oh, there we go. Must be God. No, anyone listening, I'm not saying that's God. I'm not sure that that's, yeah, I think that's distorted the Christian message. And you know, I've been doing a lot of reading recently. I'm probably, some people listening are now going to burn me at the stake, but one of the guys I've been reading is a guy called Brian McLaren, who would probably be described as a progressive evangelical and not popular with all Christians. And I just read a book by him called Why Did Jesus, Moses, the Buddha, and Muhammad Cross the Road? Which, amongst other things, I just love the title. But very much the essence of the book is talks a lot about inclusivity and exclusivity, and how some people, maybe Christians, are settling on the exclusive side because they want to have a strong faith identity, and he has great sympathy for that. He wants to. Others who maybe emphasize the inclusive side because they don't want hostility and creating barriers where they don't need to be. And he has great sympathy for that. And he's saying, how can there be, if you like, a strong middle where we're not watering our faith down, but at the same time, there is a openness, there's a generosity towards others. And that thing is inclusivity, which reminds me of big words of, I think it was Gandhi with the Christian missionary Stanley Jones, was asking, how can Christianity be more relevant in India? And Gandhi said things like, well, you know, practice your faith without watering it down. Emphasize love, which is supposed to be the center of your faith. But also have great sympathy towards other people and where they're coming from. Understand other people's, you know, it's not that we've all got to be experts on every worldview, but I just think so much of what goes on or can go on in the church world is exclusive, which is nothing to do specifically with the gospel. It's what we wrap around it. Anyway, stop me talking, Russ. I'm going to.
That's possible. Because I wonder how much of the exclusivity is because of fear. You know, because we're, and I'll say we, because you know, we're part of the church, but scared of things we don't understand. Scared that if the rules aren't the way we, you know, if they're not black and white and cut and dry, that we won't know what to do. Mm. We won't know if we're doing the right thing. Mm. It'll just feel like it's all one big gray mess. And so I wonder how much of us sort of being the watchman at the gate, which is what I feel like this ends up being, is that we end up, you know, like you said, behavioral managers and the police, yes. You know? And I think I wonder if it's that, fear of like, okay, we can't let just anybody in here because they could influence this, they could question that, and what will we do if we don't have the answers?
Yeah, steady on, a church which is open for anybody. Oh,
But I'm just hearing you talk, I'm thinking about, in a way, maybe in Jesus' time it was slightly easier, in the sense that Jesus didn't really have he did have a church because people came to him. I was thinking he went out to people and he reached out to them, and he didn't say we meet there anyway. But what he did is he went out to people who were already outcasts of society, so they were rejected by society. That was the poor people, the oppressed, the lame, the sick people, the lepers.
Tax collectors. Yeah. So sex workers.
Yeah. So the advantage, that Jesus had was that society was already turning their backs on that group of people, and so they needed help. And a lot of the miracles that Jesus did were directed towards restoring those people into a proper serious position in society, or at least allowing them in and letting them in. And it feels a bit like the rejection of people is now handed over to the church, and telling, so the church has to tell people that they are not good enough, but we have the answer, so that can't be right. But that's just, yeah, I don't know, that's what's happening in my mind.
So yeah. it was a bit like you've taken church, the. Oh, sorry.
Without churches, we would have a problem with him because he brings all kinds of people to church that we are not comfortable with.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. I was thinking about the story, Joseph speaking about, you know, Jesus told about the Good Samaritan and just the whole point that it was the Samaritan and how radical, but also pretty offensive that was to probably quite a few of his hearers, you know, but who are all the Samaritans in the list of people in the church world? Yeah. You know, the other thing I remember that reading the thing about Stanley Jones and Gandhi, the first thing that Gandhi said to him, the most important thing you do is live like Christ.
Yeah.
You know, if you live like Christ, and I wonder if what does that look like for my life? I of course have to ask that. If we were all living more like Christ, maybe it wouldn't feel so inclusive versus exclusive. We're just getting on and doing the Jesus thing. And I know Cor could quite rightly jump in right now and say, well, what is that Jesus thing? I get that.
I'm thinking of a quote, I don't know it literally anymore, by Wilkin van de Kamp, who is a ministry leader. And he said something like, I would love to be in a church where sinners feel welcome, or something along those lines. I don't know, I remember exactly what he said. And then I'm thinking, yeah, that could, but there's immediately a lot of uncomfortability with that, because how do you make sinners feel welcome, or whatever, I don't know, people who don't like Jesus, or without
probably start by not calling them sinners.
Yeah,
probably exactly start. I mean,
exactly.
You just, you know, when you slap a label on someone, you know, it's that also, it's uncomfortable, and it's hard to walk into a place and feel okay when you know they're already looking at you a certain way, with a certain lens. Yeah.
I think, and then the tension is the approval of the person, but maybe not all of their behavior. So if we talk about tax collectors, Jesus embraced them, but I think as a result, at least one of them gave back a lot of money that he stole or wriggled out of people. I don't think Jesus whispered that in his ear, but that is the effect that you would want to see. So you would, I don't know, how do you,
it's, how but do you communicate that? Jesus brought that change in him, didn't he? As you say,
he
didn't whisper it in his ear. And it's just how do we trust the work of God in our own lives, let alone worrying about anybody else, to bring about the changes that the Lord wants to bring about in us.
Yeah.
And I wonder sometimes, again, if the church world, there can be a fixation on certain things, and actually maybe the Spirit of God is more concerned about something else at that moment.
Yeah.
And the other things which maybe we might, and I'm not wanting to get to specific examples, but I could give some, you know, the things that very often, particularly maybe the evangelical world will emphasize, maybe that's not the top priority for the Holy Spirit at that moment. And actually there's something else that he wants to deal with.
Yeah.
And other stuff will work out along the way. Mm. Yeah, I don't think Jesus died on the cross for primarily to set up some organization that was the moral policeman and policewomen of the world, you know? Is that really why he went to the cross?
So why do we find it so hard to be open to all? Because I do sense that there is some form of uncomfortability. What risk do we run if we're open to all?
If I speak for myself...
Yeah.
It is related to what Gandhi said, well, live like Jesus. I find that not comforting, not encouraging, because I feel that I must live up to an ideal that is beyond me.
Right.
Yeah. And then I feel not accepted, but rejected. And if a church would promote that exclusively, I would feel very depressed and excluded in that church. And I don't think Jesus did that. When I read the Gospels, then I see a man who, according to those Gospels, represented God in how he dealt with us, who sees through everything and knows that I cannot live up to that ideal.
Yeah.
And one of the problems that I think in the modern world that we often have, we see our life as believers as individual life. When I read the Gospels, even that, what is traditionally called the Magnificat, the Song of Mary in Luke 2, she speaks about a turning around of a society, of a community. And I don't think that individually I cannot live up to Jesus. But I hope that as a community, that people recognize Jesus in that community in the way that, well, I feel accepted and loved, that I know I'm not perfect. I have my wrongs. I bring with me a life history where there are enough mistakes. There are enough regrets. But there is that acceptance.
Yeah.
And that would encourage me to find peace. And if I feel accepted, there is more space, at least with me, to accept others. But if we just look at our life as individual believers, then I'm thrown back on myself. And then I have to find that with God, that I would find it way more difficult. So that message of the church for me, it brings me to God over some kind of bridge, but brings me into a community that God, with Jesus at the cross and at all the resurrection, has made. That's the church. I hope at least that we can't live up to that ideal as a church, but if we make it into an ideal, we are lost.
Yeah.
We can only be honest to ourselves and to each other, and to receive that love and mercy and compassion in the community of the church. That is basically what church is. And for me, it changes exclusivity and inclusivity, something like that. And what we do as in our church, we journey with each other.
Yeah.
Full of compassion. And we are very hesitant to say, well, that is wrong. You should change that. Because we, at least I know, that what is wrong in our life is often rooted deep in us. And sometimes those things are mistakes I've made. And sometimes it's just a bad feeling about myself. And yeah. So yeah, community is very important and very difficult. That would be my response there.
And I think what it's saying, Cor, I think, you know, that Jesus is called for us to love the Lord with all our heart and soul and mind, and love our neighbor as ourselves. Particularly that second part is so only can be done in community, because, you know, we could all, I'll love my neighbor as myself, but actually, unless we're actually journeying that with other people, well, it's not happening. And actually, to a certain extent, the first part isn't happening either. You know, it loving Lord with all my being can't just be me and an island on my own. And I think that's why we do so need each other. And I think the church in that sense should be as open as it possibly can be, and recognize people in different places in their journey. I mean, I was thinking of Pentecost coming up. Thank goodness he's given us the Holy Spirit as well, that the Spirit of God is. And I know there can be some mystery as well of what does that exactly look like in each of our lives as well as corporately, but that the Holy Spirit is at work. And can we trust for just more of the Spirit to be at work in people's lives, my own life included, than it just being about my own efforts? Because I agree with you, because otherwise, you know, how, you know, I would agree that the words of Gandhi just end up being sort of a bit depressing, really. Okay, yeah, just love like Jesus. Yeah, that sounds cool. But what does that mean in reality?
Jesus, you know, also was surrounded with people.
Yeah.
He kept people close. Not everyone all the time, but, you know, his disciples were with him. And not every single disciple, then he had the three. And so in that sense, I mean, if we are like, feeling this weird standard of living like Jesus and not wanting to do that alone, it's because we're not. Even Jesus didn't do it alone. He lived his life with others, and of course he's Jesus, so it's a little different. He was the one doing the teaching, and revealing things and bringing things out in people. And it's actually, I was thinking, Andy, when you were saying, would Jesus come in and like flip tables if he came into our church, you know? And I know that like there was a purpose and a reason for him flipping the tables in the temple. But when you said it, I started kind of chuckling, because that's not like, I can't imagine him doing that coming into our church. I could see him like gently taking us by the hand and saying, hey, you know, there are people that get left out when this happens, or I want all my people to gather here. You know, I could see him like guiding us in that way,
yes.
And showing us, because a lot of times I think, especially with our church, like I've said before, there are things that I feel like we do really well, and we are really welcoming. And Corey, you said it, we want to journey with people. Like we are very hesitant to say, hey, what you're doing is not okay, you can't be here. We don't do that. Like, we don't tell people they can't come with us, you know? So we journey with people, and that to me is, you know, that to me is Jesus. Like, he will come alongside you and guide you. And the things that he points out in your life are not for him to feel better. You know, as it often happens with us as people, we look at someone else and say, hey, what you're doing is not okay, because it makes me feel yucky. Because your stuff is rubbing on my stuff and I don't like it. It's making me feel weird. Oftentimes we correct people because of how it makes us feel. But when Jesus brings correction into people's lives, and you see it throughout the Gospels, it's because he loves them. And he's like, hey, woman at the well, you are living a lonely, heartbreaking life. Let me give you something better. You know? And I think that would make such a huge difference in how the church approaches people and hurting people. You know, I think it would make a huge difference if we see that when we say to someone, what you're doing is actually hurting yourself. It's not because I need to morally police you, but because you're in pain. You know? So let's see if we can do something about that. Let's journey together so that you're not sitting alone in pain. I don't know, but that's, again, that's me bringing me.
And I think it's a challenge, isn't it, of how do we have Christ in us working in each of our lives, but also how can we express the life of Christ to one another and help each other? I mean, I was thinking about, you know, when he talks to the guy who's got all those riches, you know, and clearly Christ has incredible compassion, but actually what he speaks into that guy's life is incredibly life challenging. And as far as we know, the guy doesn't respond. He walks away very sad, because based Jesus says in his case, well, if you're going to follow me, give everything up. Just your entire wealth, just give it away. And of course, that can be taken to extreme. Everyone goes, oh, we've all got to give everything away. That wasn't what Jesus was saying. But in his case, it was. Or the woman who's dragged before him because she's been caught in bed with a guy. And of course, where's the guy? I mean, there's all kinds of stuff around that story. But, you know, Jesus doesn't condemn her, you know, and as all they they've all gone off, the oldest guys first and leaving the younger guys, and then they've gone. He also says, well, nor do I condemn you, but also leave your life of sin. It's this grace and truth. It's not like Jesus ducked the sin thing. It's just the way that Jesus communicated it, including the conviction that came for that. I think, yeah, somehow that's got lost somewhere at times in the church world, where, yeah, because, and I know, you know, some people say, well, that story is not in some of the original gospel accounts, so we don't even know it's a proper story. Well, yeah, okay, that's another debate. But I think it is about how do we include people, but Jesus didn't duck the sin thing. It's just he talked about it maybe in very different ways than the church world has distorted it at times, I think. And that makes it exclusive. So,
and what I like about the story of the rich young man, Jesus then turns to his disciples, have that conversation with them. And his disciples wonder whoever is going to be saved.
Yeah.
This young man is now sent away. And maybe that's part having that standard, okay, it's okay. But it comes back to us.
Mm.
And that is also a part of the story.
Yes.
Well, at least what I find, if I hearing this and thinking about this, what I found comforting about it all is that as a church, none of us is good enough. So we're all, if we are included in it all, that's not because we are good enough, but more that we embrace the fact that we are not good enough. And I think that's more the message to others. Don't think that we are perfect or better than you. We're as difficult cases as you are. So, and you're welcome. We're willing to help you. And I think many of the gospel stories are sort of open-ended, so that you don't hear what's happening with the rich young guy. And I think also part of the effect is that you as a reader start thinking, so, okay, what do I do with this? It makes you think. And I think an important part in the whole thing is, are you open to let Jesus speak into your life? Or are you just, yeah, well, that's a nice message, but you don't let him change you. I think that's a major thing I've heard people say, well, I respond in this very, this is not someone in church, by the way. I respond in a certain way, and in responding that way, the person tends to hurt other people. Saying, well, I am just like that. And then I think you miss an opportunity not going the journey and allowing yourself to be changed. Does that make sense? If even someone like that, if you invite Jesus in your life, you can change, you can be made milder. But if you just say, well, okay, I am who I am and I can't change, then nothing will happen. I think that's also part of the message, is even though we are not perfect, we cannot be made perfect, but we can change and look more like Jesus.
Maybe that's part of being inclusive, being welcoming, is that we are open.
Yeah.
Open to new perspectives and open to change ourselves.
Yeah.
And when we are exclusive, we are closed.
Yeah.
And maybe we are closed in fear.
Yeah.
Because we don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
But each of us is different.
Yeah.
And if we want to hear each other, we need to be open.
Yeah.
And that's not always easy. It needs a safe environment. And it needs a lot of courage, I think. as I recently sometimes say, being a believer is not for the faint-hearted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I think that is in this conversation also a line. Believing is not the same as being certain.
Yeah.
Believing is reaching out to God because, well, this is beyond human power. Believe that God reaches down to us and that we reach out to each other, that there is a fundamental trust that that is okay to do.
Yeah.
And that comes with doubt.
Yeah.
And that's good because doubt makes us open. It's difficult, but it's also, yeah, makes us open to a different perspective than we have.
Mm.
But I must say, even then, we need to be aware that each of us has a different journey.
Mm.
For some, doubt is more prominent than for others. That is also part of that community.
Yes.
It's also part of being inclusive for the different kind of people we are.
Yeah.
Some people need more ensuring than other people. Some people can live with a lot of doubt, and other people need more safety. It is also the challenge of being that community.
Yeah. What I like about being open and staying open, or at least if I listen to what Christina said at the beginning, was I think you sort of expressed, Christina, that you for the wrong reasons started your faith journey, right? Like looking back at it now.
Yeah.
But the good thing is that you weren't kicked out. They didn't say, "Oh, sorry, Christina, you started believing for the wrong reasons." By even though your image wasn't perfect, you were allowed to stay and continue your journey and develop your image of God and develop your relationship with God. And that's great because none of us all now have the perfect image of Jesus, I think. We are still developing and it's still changing. That's good. But a drawback of that, it's not nice and neat and black and white and orderly. So people who like it to be overzichtelijk, how do you say that? Ordered, structured, we understand everything is closed. We are a church of grace more than we are of black and white, but yet I think we do acknowledge that there is also something like good and bad, good theology, bad theology, stuff like that. So
and there has to be room for the people who need the rules.
Yeah.
Because otherwise we are still being exclusive.
That's
you
it.
Know. So
that's
there it. Still has to be space at the table for people who need a dogmatic approach to faith.
Yeah.
And I think what makes the difference is just remaining teachable, and communicating. Like if we just I see that. I see you. I see that you need there to be rules to feel safe.
Yeah.
And I get that. I get that. Yeah. I want to feel safe too.
Yeah.
But in order for other people to feel safe, you're probably going to need to change the way you approach them. Because we want to keep everybody safe, right? We want to make sure that it's safe for everybody. And so it's that is difficult, right? Is having like space for everyone and making sure that no one is the villain in this
scenario.
Because what they're saying may be difficult for us to hear or even offensive for us to hear, that we don't paint them as the villain, that we still see them as people who need to be loved and seen and heard, who are probably scared or, you know, in pain or something. I find difficult.
Probably people who have a bit more black and white view of things, they can also communicate things a bit better. I think they have something to add. They're not wrong. They have just a different view, and they have something to add to the whole picture. So, I want to add that to what we're saying.
And that's the the beauty of diversity, and I don't like using keywords like this because I feel like it automatically shuts other people out. People will hear this and go, oh my gosh, this again, you know? So I'm trying to use it in the way it's made to be used. The beauty of having a diverse body of people is that we get to see more of God that way.
That's it.
Parts of God that we don't see if we're by ourselves. If it's only people who think like us, who look like us, who act like us, then we're missing out.
We're not complete.
Yes, exactly.
And I thought one of the things I wanted to say, which I wanted to show visually, but of course this is just a podcast and just audio. I want to say when it comes to black and white, that it's actually maybe Jesus's black and white is far narrower in that sense than the wider church, you know, that and we pin certain things being black and white that aren't, but it doesn't mean that we believe anything goes. It's just maybe, and I think that's one of the beauties of the National Church, so it's always good to have a good bark. Of an international church, you've got people from all these different cultural backgrounds and so on. It's really made me have to think since 2006, what really is important about faith, and hear different people's perspectives, and that's been so massively helpful and also incredibly challenging at the same time. And I'm still on that journey, but you know, I think me now compared to me at university, well, I think me at university would just think I was wishy-washy and lost it now, probably. I've no idea. But you know, I think so. There aren't things which are right or wrong or black and white. It's just maybe those things aren't what we deem as being that, and how God sees that aren't always the same. And it's how we split that. And especially when you start talking about other things in society where people might feel excluded because of gender issues, identity issues, disability, political views, I mean, all kinds of other things, because we're whole people, you know, there's all of that as well. And I think, you know, some of this discussion we're having today, and it's important to keep it central to begin with around Jesus, but there are all these other issues as well, and probably for us four, but also anyone who might listen to this podcast, we probably all got we want to be as inclusive as possible, whatever, but then that particular person or that particular group of people in society come to mind. Do we then want to be inclusive? Because that's now the rubber's hitting the road. It's back to the Good Samaritan story again. Who's our Samaritan or Samaritans? And I find that a challenge, you know?
That's a convicting question. You said, who's our Samaritans? And I'm thinking, you're going, oh no, do I have, like, who comes to mind? Who are the, and it doesn't, nobody sprang to mind, not like that. But that's a good question to ask yourself. Mm. You know, like, who are the people that I would walk by and just be like, nope, I'm not helping you. Like, because we're human. And chances are there is someone or a group of someones or something that you just would be uncomfortable with. And if you take the chance to look at yourself and gain some insight into why they make you uncomfortable, then there's room there to work on that, to find the truth of, you know, what makes us scared. What is it that makes us, you know, less likely to reach out to someone? It's a good question.
Yeah, ex-school teacher. Maybe it's good homework for us all, myself included. But
I think, you know, you've said it a couple times. This image keeps coming to my mind of, you know how at like the fair, the kermis, or like a park, they have those sticks that they hold up so that kids under a certain height can't get on the ride. And I think that. I get that image when it comes to the church, that we've sort of pulled up this measuring stick that says, well, you can't come in unless you measure up to this.
Yep.
Whatever this is, whatever are those things that we, you know, deem inappropriate or whatever. Yep. And so we've posted ourselves at the entrance to God, to Jesus, to whatever, and said, well, you know, sorry, if you have to be this high, and if you're not this high, then you don't get to come in.
Yeah.
And I think that Jesus would do away with the stick.
Oh, yeah.
Jesus would do away with the stick.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, come in. Step in here with us. See what this is all about. You know, and just, I wonder, are we doing that well? Are we communicating that well? Mm. That you don't have to measure up to anything or anyone to be part of this, to join in.
Yeah.
You know, and is that right? I mean, I feel like it is, but I use the word feel on purpose because, you know, there are things that I feel first and think about later.
But
that feels right to me to not have this standard.
And how do you help the people who feel the stick is there and judging them? And how do you help those who think we need a stick because without a stick, anything goes, you know, and then we're just into a mishmash. And so,
that's true.
Pastorally, I see that both ways. And
long as we see people and not things or cases or something like that, I think we are on the right way. Now we need to close up a bit here. What a final thought from me, what I like about being inclusive is that we are diverse. And we live in a world where diversity is not that easy. We have each our bubbles. And we need to be careful that our church do not become bubbles.
Yes.
But that we reflect something of the diversity, how people live their life, the political choices, etc. That diversity is present in the church. There's also a way to be inclusive. That we not, that we are diverse in all colors, however you understand color. That is that's also a challenge. But we go back to Jesus, who was not a white male, but a Jew from the Near East.
Yeah.
So only a very small people can claim it as his own, but he's also that that human being that we that identifies with all of us. Any last thoughts?
Just look forward to some more conversations. We can roll this out a little bit more, Just look forward to that. And, you know, if this goes out there somewhere, people who've listened, we hope something has been helpful for you as we've talked together. But
We hope, of course, to hear something back.
Yes.
I'll say something about that in the conclusion.
Yeah.
I'll record something before and after, and this goes in between. And I suggest that we keep it to this. We hope to be back next month with a new podcast. In the meantime, you can find us on our website, ichurchleiden.nl. Have a good week. Bye.